All right. I think we'll chant again. Oh, hey, Vaishnava Thakur, because we are dependent on the mercy of His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. And by Prabhupada's mercy, we have been given the highest truth. But even if we have the highest truth, we should still be interested in the basic philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Just like today, I was doing a study of the Bhagavad Gita and its nectar. So someone may say, so many years you've been in the Hare Krishna movement. You should be talking about the gopis or the coward boys or something like that. But every part of the Lord's transcendental body is transcendental, is relishable and non-different. Whether we're talking about the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 11th canto, 12th canto, Bhagavad Gita, anything about Krishna or Krishna's devotees is equally relishable. And if we're not thinking like that, it's cold. Sahaja. Okay, we don't want to be a sahaja, taking things very cheaply, thinking that we are on a higher level of devotional service. Okay, so Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Krishna say to
that say Satoshi Shimad is Divine Grace Abhaya Chadanada Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Kijai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Kijai Anantakoti Vaishnav Vrinda Kijai Namacharya Srila Kridas Thakur Kijai Prem Se Koho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sidwaita Gadadha Shiva Siddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Kijai Sri Sri Radhakrishna Gopikopanath Sai Mukunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturidam Kijai Jagannatha Swami Kijai Yamunamai Kijai Srimati Lasi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nama Om Vishnu Paraya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaur Vani Pacharani Nivashesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarane Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, let me read the translation. O Venerable Vaishnava, O Ocean of Mercy, be merciful unto your servant. Give me the shade of your lotus feet and purify me. I hold on to your lotus feet. Teach me to control my six passions, rectify my six faults. Bestow upon me the six qualities and offer unto me the six kinds of holy association. I do not find the strength to carry on alone the sankirtan of the holy name of Hari. Please bless me by giving me just one drop of faith with which to obtain the great treasure of the holy name of Krishna. Krishna is yours. You have the power to give him to me. I am simply running behind you shouting, Krishna, Krishna. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ki Jai. So we're going to continue with our study of the Krishna book. All right. So, Om Gana Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master's divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Jai Prabhupada. So, We're reading from the 13th chapter of Krishna book, which details Lord Brahma stealing the calves of the coward boys. And anyway, let's share the screen and we'll continue reading. We're right in the middle of the 13th chapter. Alright, give me 1 second to share the screen. There we go. Okay. Okay, so we'll continue. While Krishna and Balaram were talking, Brahma returned after a moment's interval, according to the duration of his life. We have information of Lord Brahma's duration of life from the Bhagavad Gita, 1,000 times. The duration of the four ages are 1,000 times 4,320,000 years constitute Brahma's 12 hours. Similarly, one moment of Brahma's time is equal to 1 year of our solar calculation. So in other words, Lord Brahma stole the calves and the coward boys, and he felt repentant after a moment, which was a year on the earth plane. After one moment of Brahma's calculation, Brahma came back to see the fun caused that by his stealing the boys and calves. But he was also afraid that he was playing with fire. Krishna was his master, and he had played mischief for fun by taking away his calves and boys. He was really anxious, so he did not stay away for very long. He came back after a moment by his calculation. He saw that all the boys and calves were playing with Krishna in the same way as when he had come upon them, although he was confident that he had taken them and made them lie down asleep under the spell of his mystic power. Brahma began to think, "All the boys and calves were taken away by me, and I know they are still sleeping. How is it that a similar batch of boys and calves is playing with Krishna? Is it that they are not influenced by my mystic power? Have they been playing continually for 1 year with Krishna?" Brahma tried to understand who they were and how they were uninfluenced by his mystic power, but he could not ascertain it. In other words, he himself came under the spell of his own mystic power. The influence of his mystic power appeared like snow in darkness or a glowworm in the daytime. During the night's darkness, the glowworm can show some glittering power, and the snow piled up on top of a hill or on the ground can shine during the daytime. But at night, the snow has no silver glitter, nor does the glowworm have any illuminating power during the daytime. Similarly, when the small mystic power exhibited by Brahma was before the mystic power of Krishna, it was just like snow at night or a glowworm during the day. When a man of small mystic power wants to show potency in the presence of greater mystic power, he diminishes his own influence. He does not increase it. Even such a great personality as Brahma, when he wanted to show his mystic power before Krishna, became ludicrous. Brahma was thus confused about his own mystic power. In order to convince Brahma, In order to convince Brahma that all the calves and boys were not the original ones, the calves and boys who were playing with Krishna transformed into Vishnu forms. That means forearms, foreheads. Ooh. So he saw that they were God or expansions of Krishna. Actually, the original ones were sleeping under the spell of Brahma's mystic power, but the present ones seen by Brahma were all immediate expansions of Krishna or Vishnu. Vishnu is the expansion of Krishna. So the Vishnu forms appeared before Brahma. All the Vishnu forms were of bluish color and dressed in yellow garments. All of them had forehands decorated with club, disc, lotus flower, and concho. On their heads were glittering golden helmets inlaid with jewels. They were bedecked with pearls and earrings and garlanded with beautiful flowers. On their chests were the mark of Sri Vatsa. Their arms were decorated with armlets and other jewelry, and their necks were just like conch shells. Their legs were decorated with bells, their waists with golden belts, and their fingers with jeweled rings. Brahma also saw that upon the whole body of each Lord Vishnu, from the lotus feet up to the top of the head, fresh tulasi leaves and buds had been thrown. Another significant feature of the Vishnu forms was that all of them were looking transcendentally beautiful. Their smiling resembled the moonshine, and their glancing resembled the early rising of the sun. Just by their glancing, they showed themselves to be the creators and maintainers of the modes of ignorance and passion, and also goodness. Vishnu represents the mode of goodness, Brahma represents the mode of passion, and Lord Shiva represents the mode of ignorance. Therefore, as the maintainer of everything in the cosmic manifestation, Vishnu is also the creator and maintainer of Brahma and Shiva. After this manifestation of Lord Vishnu, Brahma saw that many other Brahmas and Shivas and demigods and even insignificant living entities, down to the ants and very small straws, all moving and non-moving entities, were dancing surrounding Lord Vishnu. Their dancing was accompanied by various kinds of music, and all of them were worshipping Lord Vishnu. It's interesting. All the insects, and there's a type of animals that looks like a straw with legs on it. I guess the praying mantis or something similar to that. Brahma realized that all those Vishnu forms were complete mystic power, from the anima perfection of becoming small like an atom up to the infinite like the cosmic manifestation. That's called Mahima. All the mystic powers of Brahma, Shiva, and all the demigods and the 24 elements of the cosmic manifestation were fully represented by the person of Vishnu. By the influence of Lord Vishnu, all subordinate mystic powers were engaged in his worship. He was being worshipped by time, space, the cosmic manifestation, reformation, desire, activity, and the three qualities of material nature. Lord Vishnu Brahma also realized is the reservoir of all truth, knowledge, and bliss. He is the combination of three transcendental features, namely eternity, knowledge, and bliss. That's Sat, Chit, Ananda. And he is the object of worship by the followers of the Upanishads. Brahma realized that all the different forms of boys and calves transformed into Vishnu forms were not transformed by a mysticism of the type that a yogi or a demigod can display by specific powers invested in it. Prabhupada one time explained that when the yogis, they would expand themselves, it was like television expansions. He was talking about, I guess it was Shobhari Muni, who expanded himself 50 times to get married to 50 beautiful girls. The calves and boys transformed into Vishnumurtis or Vishnu forms were not displays of Vishnu Maya or Vishnu's energy, but were Vishnu himself. The respective qualifications of Vishnu and Vishnu Maya are just like fire and heat. So in other words, Vishnu Maya means the energy of Vishnu. Like this material energy, the spiritual energy, these are different energies. Vishnu Shakti Para Prabdashe Chakyakitada Para. So basically, there's three categories of Vishnu Maya or energies. There's material energy, spiritual energy, and the Jiva soul, the marginal energy of the Lord. In the heat, there's the qualification of fire, namely warmth, and yet heat is not fire. The manifestation of the Vishnu forms of the boys and calves was not like the heat. In other words, it wasn't the energy of Krishna. It was Krishna, but was rather the fire. They were all actually Vishnu. In other words, they weren't energetic expansions. They were all Advaita Chudadade Vanantarum Rupam Adyam Puranapusham Navyovanam Cha. They were all non-different from Krishna. Factually, the qualification of Vishnu is full truth, full knowledge, and full bliss. That's Satchitananda again. Another example can be given with material objects which are reflected in many, many forms. For example, the sun is reflected in many water pots, but the reflections of the sun in the many pots are not actually the sun. There's no actual heat or light from the suns in the pots, although they appear like the sun, but the forms which Krishna assumed were each and every one full Vishnu. The specific word used in this connection is Satcha Jnana Nantananda. Satcha means truth, jnana, full knowledge, ananta, unlimited, and ananda means full bliss. The glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are so great that the impersonalist followers of the Upanishads cannot reach the platform of knowledge to understand them. Especially the transcendental forms of the Lord are beyond the reach of the impersonalists, who can only understand through studying the Upanishads that the absolute truth is not matter, or is not materially restricted. From Krishna's expansion into Vishnu forms, Lord Brahma can understand by his limited potency that everything moving and non-moving within the cosmic manifestation is existing due to the expansion of the energy of the Supreme Lord. So, of course, the impersonalists, they can somehow or other understand the absolute truth is not matter, but they don't understand the qualities, the name, the form, the pastimes over the absolute truth. When Brahma was thus standing baffled in his limited power and conscious of his limited activities within the 11 senses, he could realize that he was also a creation of the material energy, just like a puppet. Of course, his soul is not a creation of the material energy, but his body is. As a puppet has no independent power to dance, but dances according to the direction of the puppet master, so the demigods and living entities are all subordinate to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As it is stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the only master is Krishna, and all others are his servants. And that's the verse, Ekala Ishwara Krishna Arasabda Vricha. There's one Ishwara. Ekala. Ekala means one. Ishwara Krishna Arasabda Vricha. Everyone else is a servant. The whole world is under the waves of the material energy, and beings are floating like straws in the water, but their struggle for existence is continuing. But as soon as one becomes conscious that he is the eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this maya or illusory struggle for existence is immediately stopped. Mam jiyo, jo vyavicharena, bhakti yogena sevatai, sagutan, sagunan samati jaitan, brahma bhuyaya kalpate. So one who engages in devotional service, Bhagavad Gita, mam jiyo vyavicharena, bhakti yogena sevatai, serving Krishna out of love, sagunan samati jaitan. He overcomes the modes of nature, the gunas, and he becomes established in spirit. Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Lord Brahma, who has full control over the goddess of learning and was considered to be the best authority in Vedic knowledge, was thus perplexed, being unable to understand the extraordinary power manifested by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the mundane world, even a personality like Brahma is unable to understand the mystic power of the Supreme Lord. Not only did Brahma fail to understand, but he was perplexed even to see the display which was being manifested by Krishna before him. Krishna took compassion upon Brahma because of his inability to see how Krishna was displaying the forms of Vishnu and transforming himself into calves and coward boys, and thus, while fully manifesting the Vishnu expansions, he suddenly pulled his curtain of Yogamaya over the scene. Yogamaya is Krishna's internal potency. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not visible due to the curtain spread by Yogamaya. That's Naham Prakasha Sarvasha Yogamaya Samavrata. That which covers the reality is Maha. Or the external energy which does not allow a conditioned soul to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead beyond the cosmic manifestation. So that's the bewildering potency of the Lord. Not only bewildered, she throws us into illusion and she keeps us in illusion. Even when we want to get out, she just tells us, you know, you don't really want to get out. Too much enjoyment here. But the energy which partially manifests the Supreme Personality of Godhead and partially does not allow one to see is called Yogamaya, and I have to explain that. So the internal potency, Yogamaya, will partially, because you can't fully see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, every aspect, I mean, he's unlimited, he's Ananta, but you'll see what he wants you to see, and then sometimes you'll even forget that he's God, so you can interact with him in your Rus, that is, Rati, in your relationship that you have with him. So that's Yogamaya. Yogamaya also causes forgetfulness. Krishna himself sometimes allows himself to be put under Yogamaya so that he will forget that he's God, so he can actually enjoy in his relationships with the devotees. Brahma is not an ordinary conditioned soul. He is far, far superior to all the other demigods, and yet he could not comprehend the display of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Krishna willingly stopped manifesting any further potency. The conditioned soul not only becomes bewildered, but is completely unable to understand. The curtain of Yogamaya was drawn so that Brahma would not become more and more perplexed. When Brahma was relieved from his perplexity, he appeared to awaken from an almost dead state, and he began to open his eyes with great difficulty. Thus he could see the external cosmic manifestation with common eyes. He saw all around him the super excellent view of Vrindavan, full with trees, which are the source of life for all living entities. He could appreciate the transcendental land of Vrindavan, where all the living entities are transcendental to ordinary nature. In the forest of Vrindavan, even ferocious animals like tigers live peacefully along with the deer and human beings. He could understand that because of the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vrindavan is transcendental to all other places and free of lust and greed. Brahma thus found Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, playing the part of a small coward boy. He saw that a little child with a lump of food in his left hand was searching out his friends and calves, just as he had actually been doing 1 year before, after their disappearance. Immediately, Brahma descended from his great swan carrier and fell down before the Lord just like a golden stick. The word used among the Vaishnavas for offering respect is dandavat. And actually, dandavat means falling down like a stick. It doesn't mean just folding your hands, dandavat prabhu. It means falling down like a stick. One should offer respect to the superior Vaishnavas by falling down straight with his body just like a stick. So Brahma fell down before the Lord just like a stick to offer respect, and because the complexion of Brahma is golden, he appeared to be like a golden stick lying down before Lord Krishna. All the four helmets on the heads of Brahma touched the lotus feet of Krishna. Brahma, being very joyful, began to shed tears, and he washed the lotus feet of Krishna with his tears. Repeatedly he fell and rose as he recalled the wonderful activities of the Lord. After repeating obeisances for a long time, Brahma stood up and smeared his hands over his eyes. Seeing the Lord before him, he, trembling, began to offer prayers with great respect, humility, and attention. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 13th chapter of Krishna, the stealing of boys and calves by Brahma. Okay, and 14th chapter, of course, consists of the prayers offered by Lord Brahma. And we may take a little longer to go through this chapter because I may want to comment on some things. Prayers offered by Lord Brahma to Lord Krishna. Brahma said, "My dear Lord, you are the only worshipable Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead. Therefore, I am offering my humble obeisances and prayers just to please you. Your bodily features are the color of clouds filled with water. You are glittering with a silver electric aura emanating from your yellow garments." Wow. So here it is, prayers. "Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the son of Maharaj Nanda, who is standing before me with conch shell earrings and a peacock feather on his head. His face is beautiful. He is wearing a helmet, and he is garlanded by forest flowers, and he stands with a morsel of food in his hand. He is decorated with a cane, buffalo horn, bugle, and a flute. He stands before me with small lotus feet." So this is just pretty much descriptive at this point. And then we get into some philosophy. "My dear Lord, people may say that I am the master of all Vedic knowledge, and I am supposed to be the creator of this universe. But it has been proved now that I cannot understand you, who are present before me just like a child. You are playing with your boyfriends and calves, which might imply that you do not even have sufficient education. You're appearing just like a village boy, carrying your food in your hand and searching for your calves. And yet there's so much difference between your body and mine that I cannot estimate the potency of your body. As I've already stated in the Brahma Samhita, your body is not material. Of course, in the Brahma Samhita, that's the first verse. Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchitananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarna Karnam. Krishna has a body made of eternity, bliss, and knowledge, and he is the cause of all causes. And our material bodies are made of temporary nature, ignorance, and suffering. Tell me all about it. Anyway, but our spiritual body is also made of eternity, bliss, and knowledge, but we have not realized it. We are thinking under illusion, being insane, that we are this material body, therefore we are suffering. In the Brahma Samhita state of the body, the Lord is all spiritual. There's no difference between the Lord's body and himself. Each limb of his body can perform the actions of all the others. The Lord can see with his hands, he can hear with his eyes, he can accept offerings with his legs, and he can create with his mouth. So that's that famous verse. Angani yasha shakalendriya dri timanti. That the Lord's senses, because it's all spiritual, all senses are dependent upon their material nature. And because they're dependent upon their material nature, we can only do one particular thing with each sense. I mean, I can only touch with my hands. Of course, I can hold things. That's the active sense and the perceptive sense. But I can see with the eyes, but I can't taste food with the eyes. But Krishna can do anything with any part of his transcendental body because it's transcendental. And also, in the spiritual world, we have transcendental bodies, and we can do things with different parts of our body in a similar way, not to the unlimited degree that Krishna can do it, but in a similar way to the way Krishna can do it. Brahma continued, your appearance as a coward child is for the benefit of the devotees. And although I have committed an offense at your lotus feet by stealing away your boys and calves, I can understand that you have bestowed your mercy upon me. This shows your transcendental quality of being very affectionate toward your devotees. But in spite of the potency of your bodily activities, it is to be understood that when I, Lord Brahma, the Supreme Personality of this universe, cannot estimate the childlike body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then what to speak of others? And if I cannot estimate the spiritual potency of your childlike body, then what can I understand about your transcendental pastimes? Therefore, as it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, anyone who can understand a little of the transcendental pastimes, appearance and disappearance of the Lord, becomes immediately eligible to enter into the kingdom of God after quitting the material body. This statement is confirmed in the Vedas, where it is stated, simply by understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can overcome the chain of repeated birth and death. I therefore recommend that people should not try to understand you by their speculative knowledge. The janma karma chami devyam evam yo viti tato ha chaktva deham punarjanma naiti mam adi sojana. One who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and disappearance does not take his birth again in this material world, but comes to me, O Arjuna. The best process for understanding you is to submissively give up the speculative process and try to hear about you either from yourself, as you have given statements in Bhagavad Gita and many similar Vedic scriptures, or from a realized devotee who has taken shelter at your lotus feet. One has to hear from a devotee without speculation. One does not even need to change his worldly position. He simply has to hear your message. And of course, Stani Stata Shruti Gatam Tan Van Manopia. Just stay in the same situation. Just hear. Because that transcendental sound vibration, Bhavanti Rikarna Rasayana Gata, will enter from the ear and go to the heart and allow you to perceive the Absolute Truth. Although you are not understandable by material senses, simply by hearing about you, one can gradually conquer the nescience, yuck, a misunderstanding. By your own grace only, you become revealed to a devotee. You are unconquerable by any other means. That's ajitta. Speculative knowledge without any trace of devotional service is simply a waste of time in the search for you. Speculation means basically the inductive process. Trying to come to a conclusion by your limited observations in this material world. And of course, Prabhupada calls this the ascending process. But our process is the descending process. Descending means we accept knowledge from above. We don't try to figure spiritual knowledge, at least, you know, material knowledge, you know, technology you can do from below. But we don't try to figure things out from below. That's speculation. We accept the authority of the Supreme Personality of God and the descending knowledge, and that comes in what? Disciplined succession. Devotional service is so important that even a little attempt can raise one to the highest perfectional platform. One should not therefore neglect this auspicious process of devotional service and take to the speculative method. By the speculative method, one may gain partial knowledge of your cosmic manifestation, but it is not possible to understand you, the origin of everything. The attempt of persons who are interested only in speculative knowledge is simply wasted labor, like the labor of a person who attempts to gain something by beating an empty husk of rice paddy. A little quantity of paddy can be husked by the grinding wheel, and one can gain some grains of rice, but if the skin of the paddy, he's talking about rice, you know, rice has to be de-skinned. So once you de-skin it, the skin is useless. But if the skin of the paddy has already been beaten by the grinding wheel, there's no further gain in beating even a huge quantity of the husk. It is simply useless labor. Of course, you can use the husk to make some pillows or something like that. My dear Lord, there are many instances in the history of human society where a person, after failing to achieve the transcendental platform, engaged himself in devotional service with his body, mind, and words, and thus attained the highest perfectional state of entering into your abode. In other words, someone tried through the speculative process, then gave up the speculative process and said, Krishna, I surrender unto you. Then he achieves the highest. And that's the easy process. The process of understanding you by speculation or mystic meditation are all useless without devotional service. One should therefore engage himself in your devotional service, even in his worldly activities, and one should always keep himself near you by the process of hearing and chanting your transcendental glories. Simply by being attached to hearing and chanting your glories, one can attain the highest perfectional stage of entering your kingdom, into your kingdom. If a person, therefore, always keeps in touch with you by hearing and chanting your glories and offers the results of his work for your satisfaction only, he very easily and happily attains entrance into your supreme abode. Very simple process. You are realizable by persons who have cleansed their heart of all contamination. This cleansing of the heart is made possible by chanting and hearing the glories of your Lordship. And of course, that's what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches us in his first verse of the Shikshashita, right? Cheto dalpana marshanam bhavamad bhagavad-nirvavamam shreya kairopi chandra-tapapitana vijupata chivanam Anandam buddhivaran vardhanam pratipadam pranam ratasvadhanam sarvatma snapanam param vijayate shi krishna sankirtanam cheto darpana marjanam. It cleanses the heart. Anyway, the Lord is all pervading, as it is stated by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Everything is sustained by me, but at the same time, I am not in everything. It's the ninth chapter, Maya Tatami Dham Sarvam. Jagadavyakta Purtinat Mastani Sarvabhutaninaham Teshva Vastata. Since the Lord is all pervading, there's nothing existing without his knowledge. So, Krishna is all pervading, and he's also separate from everything simultaneously. That's known as our Achincha Veda Veda Tattva philosophy. Krishna is all pervading by dint of his energy, and he is individually separate from everything. Especially in Goloka Vrindavan and the Vaikuntha planets and other manifestations, other incarnations, other avatars. The all-pervasive nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can never be within the limited knowledge of a living entity. Therefore, a person who has attained steadiness of the mind by fixing the mind on the lotus feet of the Lord is able to understand the Supreme Lord to some extent. That's the operative phrase there. In other words, not 100%, but to some extent. It is the business of the mind to wander over various subject matters for sense gratification. Actually, the business of the mind is accepting and rejecting things based upon sense gratification. And the business of intelligence is to have your longer-term goals. Therefore, only a person who always engages the senses in the service of the Lord can control the mind and be fixed at the lotus feet of the Lord. This concentration of the mind upon the lotus feet of the Lord is called samadhi. Until one reaches the stage of samadhi or trance, he cannot understand the nature of the Supreme Personality of God. And there may be some philosophers or scientists who can study the cosmic nature from atom to atom. They may be so advanced that they can count the atomic composition of the cosmic atmosphere or all the planets and stars in the sky, which is impossible, or even the shining molecular particles of the sun or the stars or other luminaries in the sky. But it is not possible to count the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As described in the beginning of the Vedanta Sutra, the Supreme Person is the origin of all qualities. He is generally called Nirguna. Nirguna, actually, the Prabhupada explains here. Nirguna means whose qualities are beyond estimation. Actually, in one sense, Nirguna means without qualities, but this particular translation promises beyond estimation. That's interesting. It's interesting. Yeah, because the person is interpreted, as Prabhupada says, the word Nirguna is having no quality. But also Prabhupada gives another interpretation which is similar to the impersonalist interpretation. In other places Prabhupada gives the interpretation that Krishna has no material qualities. Guna in this sense means material qualities like the three modes of nature. Because they are unable to estimate the qualities of the Lord in transcendental realization, they conclude that the Supreme Lord has no qualities. But that is actually not the position. The real position is that he is the original source of all qualities, because how would you have qualities in this world unless Krishna had the qualities? Now, this world, according to the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, is a reflection of the spiritual realm. So, if you find things in the reflection, certainly you're going to find things in the source of the reflection, those same things, and actually more. For example, if I look in the mirror, not that I want to do that, but if I look in the mirror and I see certain features on my face, those features are there on my real face, not just the mirror face, but I actually have more features that the mirror cannot properly reflect. And also the mirror reflects things opposite. You know, there's an opposite. The right becomes left, left becomes right. So the mirror analogy is actually very appropriate. All qualities are emanating constantly from him. How therefore can a limited person count the qualities of the Lord? One may estimate the qualities of the Lord at one moment, but the next moment the qualities have increased, so it is not possible to make an estimation of the transcendental qualities of the Lord. He is therefore called Nirguna. In other words, you can't understand the qualities. That's another way to understand that. And of course, there's that typical example, how Anantashesh has unlimited heads. He's glorifying the Lord, but he never comes to an end of the glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because, why is it? Because the glories of the Lord have increased exponentially, or even more than exponentially, unlimitedly at every moment. One should not uselessly labor in mental speculation to estimate the Lord's qualities. There is no need of adopting the speculative method or exercising the body to attain mystic yogic perfection. One should simply understand that the distress and happiness of this body are predestined. There's no need to try to avoid the distress of this bodily existence or to attempt to achieve happiness by different types of exercises. The best course is to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead with his body, mind, and words, and always be engaged in his service. But also we should understand this body has been given by Krishna, so we should endeavor, to a certain extent, not go crazy, to keep the body healthy. I remember one funny story. I was listening to one memory, one devotee, I think it was, Prajuna was telling this memory. One devotee went to Prabhupada and said, "What sort of exercise should we do to keep this body healthy?" And actually, Prabhupada got down and he did a push-up. So you can do push-ups and listen to Krishna Katha at the same time. That's the nice thing about push-ups, because you can listen to Krishna Katha. "This transcendental labor is fruitful, but other attempts to understand the absolute truth are never successful. Therefore, an intelligent man does not try to understand the absolute truth by speculative or mystic power. Rather, he engages in devotional service and depends on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He knows that whatever may happen to the body is due to his past fruit of activities." Of course, for a devotee, it's also due to Krishna's desire to help a devotee become detached. And it may be a reduction or a token reaction for what the devotee was supposed to have suffered for from before he became Krishna conscious. If one lives such a simple life in devotional service, then automatically he inherits the transcendental abode of the Lord. Actually, every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord and a son of the Godhead. Wow. Each has the natural right to inherit and share the transcendental pleasures of the Lord, but due to the contact of matter, conditioned living entities have been practically disinherited. Not actually disinherited, but for all intents and purposes, it appears like we're disinherited because we don't know where to find the treasure. Just like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives that example of this poor man, and he comes upon an astrologer named Sarvagyal, which means someone knows everything, and the astrologer says, "Your father has left you a lot of money, but you have nowhere to dig. You have to dig on the eastern side, because you dig on the other side, there's a poisonous wasp, there's a witch. So you got to be really careful to dig on the right side." Now, the Krishna consciousness is the right side. If one adopts the simple method of engaging himself in devotional service automatically, he becomes eligible to be freed from material contamination, elevated to the transcendental position of associating with the Supreme Lord. Let's see if there's another. Okay, so we're going to have to end here and take questions. Let's see. Write this down. I lose the place. All right. So now we will allow you to ask questions. All right. Okay. Who has a question? Rakesh, you were first. Ask your question.
Please accept my humble obeisances. Gurudev, like as you explained the word nirguna here, it's very hard to understand when you take the literal meaning of the word. So now I understand it means transcendental, beyond the material qualities. I have a similar question, like when we do in the morning the 10 offenses against the holy name, and I was just going through the in the Padma Purana, I was going through their Sanskrit counterpart. I was doing what is the Sanskrit translation. So 9 of them, I understood their Sanskrit translation. That's how it is translated. But the second one, it says that we should not consider the name of demigods like Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma to be equal or independent of the name of Lord Vishnu. And that's the right. Sanskrit sloka of that one is Shiva Shesri Vishnu Yai Guna Namadi Sakalam. If I do that literal translation of the Shiva Shesri means the name of Shiva and Lord Vishnu are the same. A person should not see any difference between them. How do you reconcile those two then?
Because that's actually quite interesting. Also, the translation of the second offensive chanting is sometimes given by Prabhupada. One should not offend the demigods like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. So that's the version from the Padma Purana, which has been, in one sense, they are the same, but they're different simultaneously. So when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu presented these 10 offenses in our disciplic succession, he's presenting it in terms of a chincha beta beta tattva. How the living entities like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, etc., 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 are one and different from the Lord. And that's the commentaries of the Acharyas explain that particular verse. And Prabhupada, following in the footsteps of the Acharyas, actually translates it in that particular way. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's why. And so, as I said before, Prabhupada also adds, one should not offend the demigods like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. So it's sort of a purported translation and application given to us by the Acharya. That's why it's stated, Tarko Pratishta Shutina Vivina. Then one cannot understand these things by one's logic or even translation or studying the Vedic literatures. Shutina Vivina, because the Vedic literatures are multi-branched, and only by Mahajaniyena Gata Sapanta. That's why we accept the Acharya's translation, commentary, and understanding of a particular events on Chani, okay? Hope that explains that. Okay, so who else has a question? You can type in the text window or chat window, or you can raise your hand and then I'll allow you to unmute yourself. Oh, no one else has a question. We're reading a Krishna book. I mean, it's pretty simple philosophy. Okay, Gopal Das. Unmute yourself.
So, Lord Brahma says about not understanding Krishna's form, and then, of course, what to speak of Krishna's pastimes. But Krishna is right there revealing himself to Lord Brahma.
Yeah.
So, I guess we understand that we can't understand by speculative knowledge who is Krishna and what is his potency and so forth. But at the same time, if Krishna is revealing himself to us, isn't it kind of our obligation to...
We can't. How can we ever understand Krishna? Like I was describing, Angani Yasha Shakalendriya Driti Madhi. Any part of Krishna's body can be used for any purpose Krishna wants. Can you understand that? I mean, if you can, you're better than Lord Brahma, better than me.
Well, I can just accept what you say is the truth.
Yeah, accepting is not as different than understanding.
Can you explain that difference?
And being in love with Krishna, like Lord Brahma says, others may say they understand Krishna, but I don't.
Can you explain that difference between accepting and understanding?
Well, that's really easy. Just go to the dictionary. I accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but I really don't understand him. I mean, I understand certain things that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but I don't understand his totality. His glories are increasing unlimitedly. How can we, even Ananta Shesh can't understand Krishna, but to speak of our tiny little brains understanding Krishna. How can I can't understand how Krishna can be in unlimited places simultaneously. I accept it. I accept it on faith, but to understand fully with our limited brains is not possible.
Well, naturally, fully would never be considered.
But even 1%.
But whatever Krishna revealed to us, isn't it our obligation to? Well, I guess yes. That's the difference between accepting and understanding.
Yeah, we accept it as truth, but to understand. I mean, yeah, we understand Krishna's God. You can make a play of words like that, but basically, full understanding is not capable. Is not our capability.
I mean, by this perspective, I don't feel like I understand anything at all. Anything that I'm understanding is.
You probably understand you're a spirit soul.
I mean, I accept it. I don't understand it.
Every time I think or talk about all the things that Krishna does, then the more bewildered I become and understand that I don't understand anything. I just become overwhelmed with amazement. Like, Lord, this is what's happening with Lord Brahma right now. He's overcome, he was thinking he understood, And then he becomes overwhelmed, you know, oh my God, what's happening here? These coward boys, you know, they're actually Krishna, expansions of Krishna, and they all have four hands. And others may say they understand Krishna, but I don't understand Krishna. I love Krishna. I serve Krishna. I accept he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And obviously I understand. I mean, you can, like I said, you can make a play of words. I understand that he's the Supreme Personality of God, but I don't really understand completely what that means.
So, in a hierarchy of needs, we all have a need to be understood, and we're part and parcel of Krishna. So doesn't Krishna have some of that need also in him?
Yes, as Krishna understands us.
Doesn't he want to be understood by his devotees?
He wants to be loved. It's our need, you know, because we can't make ourselves understood, then we have this need to be understood. But because Krishna can make himself understood, and he's quite expert in the Bhagavad Gita, his need is, it's fulfilled. It's not an unmet need.
Okay, you know, so what he revealed.
Krishna is perfectly capable of making himself understood when he wants to be understood. But Krishna is also, you know, good at making himself not understood. Raja Vidya, Raja Guru. You know, so just like we have a need to hide ourselves sometimes, so Krishna also. Anyway, you can get into all this linguistic jugglery if you want. Okay.
Thank you.
What's the difference between perfection of life and purifying ourselves? We purify ourselves to achieve the perfection of life. Perfection of life is Krishna consciousness. And when you're perfectly purified by the process of chanting and hearing, then you reach the perfection of life. Perfection of life is the sadhya, and purifying oneself is the sadhana. And aspects of the sadhana, which means practice, are like hearing, chanting, remembering, serving the lotus feet, etc., like that, the Navabhakti processes, and especially the processes that have been given to us by the acharyas like Srila Rupa Goswami. Okay, thank you all for these interesting questions. Others may say they understand Krishna. I don't. I mean, I know that Krishna's God. I know that Prabhupada is pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But to understand someone who's unlimited, you know, why? I mean, I just want to love Krishna and serve Krishna. And, you know, whatever I need to understand, Mata Smriti Jnanam Aponam, Chala Krishna will allow me that. Okay, thank you very much. We'll see everybody tomorrow. Today we did 13b to 14. All glories to His Divine Grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada.